And welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and the rest of the region this Wednesday, January 15th, 2025. Even though a new report says human rights violations in one South Sudanese state are down, vulnerable people are still being abused.
There is lack of resources. People are struggling to get food. So some people also are exploiting this situation in terms of exploiting some people in sex so that they can get food, especially for the girls.
And Nimele business owners say it's tough to stay in business with high taxes and roadblocks.
It is almost even chasing us in this town. We are paying the one of 12 months and the one of 3 months. Some of business person, even they are coming out, even in Nimule. They are going because I know like 10 people who have gone. They pack their things and they went.
The Human Rights Commission in Upper Nile State says human rights violations are falling across the state. The chairperson of the state government's human rights body says his office plans to expand services to smaller groups, but resources remain a challenge. Mehmet Aberb reports.
Upper Nile State recorded high human rights violations in past years because of conflict. However, peace efforts have contributed to relative calm. Peter Ngwojo, the chairperson of Upper Nile State's Human Rights Commission, told VOA that conflict in Sudan and the economic crisis in South Sudan fuel human rights violations. Ngwojo says human rights violations have fallen after concerted efforts from the state government and partners such as the United Nations Mission in South Sudan, UNMISS.
Many people flee to South Sudan. So here in South Sudan, there is lack of resources. People are struggling to get food. So some people also are exploiting this situation in terms of exploiting some people in sex so that they can get food, especially for the girls. We have seen this, we get reports. General economic situation in the country affected this one. The number of cases is reducing. This also is a result of the hard working of the government with our partners.
Ngwojo says the commission is willing to establish more offices in the state to intensify coverage.
This year we want to form offices in the 13 counties of the state. We want to form these offices for them to report to us the cases of human rights. Also this year, we are working on awareness. We want to aware our people about the human rights so that they know their rights.
The commission chair adds that his office lacks basic equipment such as computers, recorders, and cameras for documenting cases. He also says his office does not have furniture and cars for reaching distant areas, and the staff need capacity building. John Luong, the former chairperson of Upper Nile State Civil Society Forum, says human rights violations often happen during the dry season. He urges the government, partners, and civil society groups to forge ways to prevent abuses.
People have to look for different strategies this time round, because when we are coming to the dry season now, that is where most of the issues in Upper Nile do come up. The issue of human rights violation, like we are talking about now, this is the time now people have to look out for all those things, how they can be prevented. But now nobody is working on that.
Malakal resident Gabriel Oluoch says a lack of a unified army causes human rights violations because there are different forces with different commanders in South Sudan.
And that one is always, it becomes so common because of the different groups, the security side of Saudia, because they are in the hand of protection. There's what is called IO, organized forces, and then we have what is called Yabrujok, the white army, and they are all in power.
Oluoch says those who commit human rights violations often are not brought to book because the prosecutors or police make too many compromises. He says the law should be allowed to take its course regardless of whether your relative has broken it or not.
I hear from a certain woman saying that we used to hear all the time that there's a cataracting. What about those who make rating? I never heard one day somebody take to the court and being judged. There's a compromise somewhere, and this one is not good. Everybody who made a mistake should face the law.
In 2023, the U.S. Department of State said perpetrators of human rights violations had gone unpunished. It attributed violations such as unlawful killings, abduction, rape, sexual slavery, and forced recruitment of children and adults to both armed groups and some of the groups that signed the revitalized agreement on the resolution of the conflict in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Amir Ibrahim Kod, reporting from the Upper Nile State's capital, Malakal.
Some businesses in Nimele Town are on the brink of collapse due to heavy local taxes, coupled with inflation and roadblocks along the busy Juba-Nimele Road. Dennis Ligonye reports from Nimele in eastern Equatoria State.
In Nimele, near South Sudan's border with Uganda, many traders are struggling to sustain their businesses in the face of multiple challenges. Lemi Moses, a trader in Nimele's Melekia market, says several colleagues are abandoning their businesses because of taxes levied by local authorities.
License is very high nowadays. It is almost even chasing us in this town. We are paying the one of 12 months and the one of 3 months. Some of business person, even they are coming out, even in Nimele. They are going because I know like 10 people who have gone. They pack their things and they went.
Maria Mundua, who sells second-hand clothes in Nimele, says some of the revenue officers do not want to listen to their challenges.
You cannot even imagine this, the right people coming to your shop. So you have to pay us their own power. They are really torturing us. Because when you have little thing and your tax is more than what you had in the house, what will it mean to us? And soon we shall get home because you cannot give what you don't have.
An Ethiopian trader, only identified as Thomas, says customers often ask him why he sells a bottle of water at SSP 1,500, when in Juba it sells for SSP 1,000. He says he spends more money on transportation and payment at illegal checkpoints along the road to Juba.
Borrowed like 300,000, 500,000, I paid. Now for transport, another issue, that transport. Ugandans and one Kenyans, every driver you get it, transport you buy, you ask the dollar, like $200.
Trader Moga Alfred wants the government to fix the economy and insecurity to bring peace to South Sudan.
Our economy is not stable. Things keep changing day and night. Today you'll ask here, tomorrow you'll find the prices are not the same. Business people, they need profit. And then in due course, you may find everything based on what to the last consumer, which means the last consumer, they're the ones suffering or getting the consequence of these challenges. The second thing is, it is security. As being a business people in Nimele or in South Sudan, I appeal to the government, let them at least come to the peace. You know, business, it is need peace. Without peace, anything will not go at all.
This program reached out to the office in charge of state revenue in Nimele, but was told no one had permission to speak. Michael Abuni Victor is the chairperson of the Chamber of Commerce in Nimele. He says he is working with the state government to solve some of the challenges facing traders.
There's also criminal activities taking place. There was a day 14 shops broken in one day, but as a head of Chamber of Commerce, we used to try to coordinate with through our local government, with the security agencies here. At least it is improving concerning the security. But only the problem of taxes, that is the major issue we are facing here.
South Sudan is landlocked and depends on goods from Port Sudan or the Kenyan port city of Mombasa. Last year, truck drivers stopped working to protest. Several roadblocks security forces set up along the Nimele Juba Road. In response, the army banned the illegal roadblocks, but many remain in place. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Nimele Town, Eastern Equatoria State.
Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, says it has suspended activities at a key hospital in Khartoum, Sudan, because of armed fighters entering the facility and threatening patients and staff. In part two of our conversation, Claire Sanfilippo, MSF Emergency Coordinator in Sudan, tells me that world leaders need to step up and make sure that critical humanitarian aid can be delivered without interference from either warring party in the country.
At the end of 2024, over 30% of the population in Sudan was displaced, either inside the country or into neighboring country. It's important to state that this is the largest displacement crisis in the world. More than half of the Sudanese people are facing acute level of food insecurity. And in the country, 80% of the health facilities are out of services in the areas most affected by the countries, which unfortunately is most of the areas. What we're witnessing on a daily basis is really a country that is struggling with multiple health crises. People continue to die due to violence-related injuries day in and day out. Conflict-related sexual and gender-based violence is pervasive, but medical care to respond there to barely exists. Pregnant women and children continue to die in shocking numbers of preventable conditions.
Very briefly, what's your message to the two warring commanders and the world leaders about the situation in Sudan?
Doctors Without Borders call all the warring parties to immediately cease all attacks on civilians and health facilities and respect their obligations under international law. They also need to immediately grant unconditional access and unhindered humanitarian access to allow us to deliver critical humanitarian aid through all possible routes, and that means across borders and across front lines, so that people can have access to supplies, particularly food supplies, which are absolutely vital for the population. They need to immediately and unconditionally lift all blockades and bureaucratic and administrative impediments pertaining to humanitarian access. And the international community really needs to step up, and there's a need for a massive scale up of the humanitarian response to respond to the absolutely staggering and unfathomable needs that we currently witness in Sudan.
That is Claire Sanfilippo. She is MSF Emergency Coordinator in Sudan. She was speaking to me earlier. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up on South Sudan in Focus, Ethiopia's Rift Valley has experienced a wave of earthquakes lately. But what's behind it? Find out when we come back.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
On today's Our Words of Wisdom, we hear from Central Equatoria State.
Hello, VOA News. I am Bali Vaston from Lujulo Payam of Morobo County, Central Equatoria State. My proverb is in Kelico language, which said, Miti mitir domo tolofinjulega, mi kuir idrikilaru, isadosasa, mi motolofiso fulega. The English version says, if a mosquito is biting your testicles, do not slap it. Allow it to go alive, because if you slap it, you will harm your testicles. It means if you have a dispute, if you have a problem with your neighbor, your relative, or even your brother, solve it diplomatically. Do not use violence to solve problems. Thank you. God bless you.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Over the last few weeks, at least 10 earthquakes have been recorded in Ethiopia's Rift Valley zone, the strongest being a 5.8 magnitude. VOA reported the evacuation of some 80,000 residents from the Afar, Oromia, and Amhara regions. Cynthia Ebinger, a geoscientist at Tulane University in the southern U.S. state of Louisiana, tells VOA's Yehias Wuhib that the Rift Valley is one of the most seismically active regions in the world.
Size of the earthquakes is part of the question and answer that we have as scientists. So we look at an earthquake, say, in isolation, but also in this case, what we call swarms. Lots of earthquakes in roughly the same spot, continuing over a prolonged period. And we're near active volcanoes like Fantale and Dofan. Initially, our impression was that there was some molten rock involved, and we paid close attention to the volcanoes.
So this Ethiopia's Rift Valley. Introduce us to this Rift Valley. What is it?
The Rift Valley of East Africa is the world's textbook example of how continents slowly break apart to produce new ocean basins drift apart just now, like West Africa and North America were connected 180 million years ago. They separated, and now we have an ocean between us. Well, the same is true of Arabia that split off about 30 million years ago, and that process is happening in East Africa. But, you know, most of the time, the motion is as slow as my fingernails or my hair grows. But there are extreme events that might take up 400 years worth of plate opening in a day or two. And those intense events are, in effect, what we're witnessing now. They're rare, but they happen, and they have happened in the past in this same area.
You're very familiar with Ethiopia, millions residing in Addis Ababa, in vulnerable buildings with outdated codes. Ethiopia's capital, is it in the crosshair?
The capital is going to experience ground shaking from distant earthquakes, without a doubt. And so ground shaking in Addis and the surrounding areas is an important part. Responsibilities of the scientists at the Geophysical Observatory at the university and the engineers that they interact with in trying to work to improve the codes for that shaking. But the amount of shaking decreases pretty rapidly away from where the earthquake is, so it's not really in the crosshairs. The crosshairs is a fairly narrow zone that is roughly where the Awash River is and is very near to the main road up and through to Djibouti. And that is a good, is the primary indicator of the crosshairs for right now.
This observatory in Addis Ababa, is it a kind of early warning system?
Yes, there's a network of seismometers in the country that telemeters information to the observatory. They provide near real-time information on the locations of those earthquakes. They look for patterns in the earthquakes. There are differences in the kinds of shaking that happen that help us understand, oh, is it magma or is there molten rock involved? I feel privileged to be assisting the observatory and the Institute for Geophysics at the Addis Ababa University in trying to communicate, allay concerns, and try and explain scientifically what's happening.
You are helping out, actually, with the observatory. Any advice to the government?
What I'd say is that this area, this remote area, highlights the need for instrumentation. One of the concerns, the biggest concerns at the observatory, is that they don't have enough instruments in the area to precisely determine the depth. And depth becomes important if hot material is rising upward. We want to track it over time. And without more instruments in this very active area, they can only do a kind of imprecise job. It's like surgeons trying to operate with mittens on their hands. They need better instrumentation to be able to move forward.
That is Cynthia Ebinger. She's a geoscientist at Tulane University in Louisiana, and she was speaking with my colleague Yehias Wuhib. Somalia and Ethiopia announced over the weekend that they would restore full diplomatic relations following a visit by Somalia's president to Addis Ababa to heal a year-long rift that threatened further instability in the Horn of Africa. The row was diffused by a peace deal last month, mediated by Turkey and signed by both leaders. The two countries reiterated their commitment to the deal and its, quote, spirit of friendship and solidarity, end quote. David Monda, professor of political science at City University of New York, discussed the significance of this with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi.
I think it's very significant on two fronts because Ethiopia and Somalia are key players in the African Union and in the Horn of Africa. So a regional war in the Horn of Africa between the two states is very destabilizing. But it's also a good sign in terms of Turkey's mediation as a neutral arbiter on the continent. It also shows Turkey's growing influence in Africa in terms of bringing these two regional rivals together to actually come up with an agreement, because Turkey has major interests in both Ethiopia and Somalia. I think also lastly, it shows that Addis Ababa and Mogadishu have realized that a conflict between them would actually be mutually destructive. Ethiopia has its own internal problems. We know in the Tigray region, in the Ogaden region, in the Addis metropole area. And Somalia, as we know, has challenges with Somaliland and with issues of Al-Shabaab. They have domestic problems. So I think this move is logical. It's rational for both countries. And I think it's more broadly helpful in terms of regional stability.
Egyptian troops joined the African Union support and stabilization mission in Somalia to fight Somali Islamist insurgents that launched this month. Ethiopia, which has been a key ally of Somalia in its fight against the Al-Qaeda-linked militants and is at loggerheads with Egypt over the Renaissance Dam, said it could not stand idle while other actors take measures to destabilize the region. Why was Ethiopia so alarmed by an Egyptian-Somali alliance?
I think at two levels. For one, Ethiopia wants to be the regional power and sees Egypt coming into the regional politics of the Horn of Africa as a challenge to Ethiopia's hegemony in the region. I think at a security perspective, Ethiopia is very concerned that Egypt will rearm the Somali army, and that will be a major strategic threat to Ethiopia, because we know historically Somalia has had an irredentist claim over the Ogaden region of Ethiopia. So Addis is very concerned that an Egypt-Somali alliance will not only challenge its regional hegemony, but will be a strategic threat to the Ogaden region and some of the separatist forces in that area that want to be part of Somalia. I think thirdly, it's more of an ideational perspective in terms of how Ethiopia perceives this alliance between Somalia and Egypt. Both Egypt and Somalia are Arab countries. They are members of the Arab League. So this really increases a profile of Somalia diplomatically within the Arab nations and the Arab League. I think something that Addis Ababa is very concerned about.
Egypt's Foreign Minister Badr Abdel-Aati said the Red Sea and its security is subject only to the will of the countries on its coast. And it's absolutely unacceptable for any country not bordering the Red Sea to have a presence, whether military, naval, or otherwise. Can you explain why Egypt is taking that position?
Egypt's taking that position to sideline and marginalize Ethiopia. As we know, Ethiopia does not have access to the Red Sea once Eritrea became independent. So by doing this, what Egypt is actually trying to do is to say that Somalia has every right to get into alliances with whichever country it feels like, particularly because both Egypt and Somalia have access to the Red Sea. Both Egypt and Somalia are key players within the context of geostrategic choke points. By that, I mean Egypt is central to the Suez Canal and to access all maritime traffic in that area of the Red Sea, whereas Somalia has the largest coastline in Africa, and a large part of that is on the Red Sea. So thereby, Egypt is really trying to sideline Ethiopia and reinforce its strategic partnership with Somalia. I must add that we cannot look at this statement outside of the regional rivalry between Ethiopia and Egypt, specifically around the Grand Ethiopia Renaissance Dam and the challenges that Egypt has had with that in terms of its water right.
That was David Monda, professor of political science at City University of New York. He was speaking with my colleague, Mohamed El-Shenawi. U.S. President Donald Trump's choice for Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth faced resistance from Democrats in the Senate Armed Services Committee on Tuesday. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb has the details.
Veteran and former TV host Pete Hegseth leaning into his unconventional background for a nominee for U.S. Defense Secretary.
That it's time to give someone with dust on his boots the helm.
a change agent, someone with no vested interest in certain companies or specific programs or approved narratives. My only special interest is the warfighter.
Most defense secretary picks garner wide bipartisan support. Not so for Hegseth. Senator Jack Reed is the ranking member of the Senate Armed Services Committee.
I have voted in favor of all your predecessors, including those in the first Trump administration. Unfortunately, you lack the character and composure and competence to hold the position of Secretary of Defense.
Hegseth received praise from Republicans who say a Pentagon focused on diversity, equity, and inclusion has weakened the military strength. Republican Representative Michael Waltz.
I have no doubt that he is going to get the Pentagon back to its primary mission, lethal readiness. That warrior ethos is what our enemies will respect. That warrior ethos is what our enemies will fear. And it's that warrior ethos that will keep the peace.
Democrats questioned him about allegations of misconduct and assault and his lack of managerial experience. Democratic Senator Gary Peters.
We're hiring you to be the CEO of one of the most complex, largest organizations in the world. We're the board of directors here. I don't know of any corporate board of directors that would hire a CEO for a major company if they came and said, you know, I supervised 100 people before.
Hegseth said countering China's aggressive behavior remains a top Pentagon priority.
We will work with our partners and allies to deter aggression in the Indo-Pacific from the communist Chinese.
But when asked about allies and partners in the 10-nation Indo-Pacific bloc ASEAN, Hegseth failed to name any of them. Democratic Senator Tammy Duckworth.
Ms. Hegseth, none of those countries are in ASEAN.
Across.
None of those three countries that you've mentioned are in ASEAN. I suggest you do a little homework before you prepare for these types of negotiations.
Democrats and Republicans pressed Hegseth on his recent writings and comments against women in combat.
Because I'm straight up just saying we should not have women in combat roles. It hasn't made us more effective, hasn't made us more lethal, has made fighting more complicated.
Republican Senator Joni Ernst.
As Secretary of Defense, will you support women continuing to have the opportunity to serve in combat roles?
Yes, women will have access to ground combat roles, given the standards remain high.
The Pentagon wrote to VOA that the standards for military service have not been lowered. And specifically, combat and specialized units uphold strict and rigorous criteria to ensure only qualified individuals are selected regardless of gender. Senator Elizabeth Warren voiced concern that Hegseth changed his rhetoric to secure votes for his confirmation.
And I hope you understand that many women serving in the military right now might think that if you can convert so rapidly your long-held and aggressively pursued views in just 32 days, that 32 days after you get confirmed, maybe you'll just reverse those views and go back to the old guy who said, straight up, women do not belong in combat.
Hegseth needs a majority of the Senate to confirm him. 53 of the 100 U.S. senators are Republican, but it is unclear how every senator will vote. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
And that wraps it up for us this Wednesday. We invite you to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you somehow missed this broadcast, you can just head on over to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. We now leave you with a song, Jomoko, by Olith Rotego.
Moko, yawa jok moko, jok moko, ma woya woya, kingi woya woya, manaka jok michieno, igal niya mu eloga katogeno, katogeno, yawa katogeno, epinka, chirega jok moko, jok moko, yawa jok moko, ma woya woya, kingi woya woya, manaka jok michieno, igal niya mu eloga katogeno, Katogeno, yawa katogeno.
We've been listening to Jomoko by Oluth Protego. I am your host, Carol Van Dam in Washington. On behalf of our engineer, John Dryden, and producer, Kwame Afori, thanks for tuning in. We'll talk with you tomorrow on our next edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Lakini nitere gosiepe mamoko maga ole maga njao Lika kongo debeto yeno nyalo ngeoni Kata mopongo gunia kata mana dunia Lakini niseni wodi mama Miagi moro matina ritra kutat marachi Toda komi osiepe tobe